Guys, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
We, like our fourth or fifth episode, we visited the Hamptons and Greenwich at the same time. We were kind of comparing markets, but now we're back and we need to see and understand what's going on there.
Yeah, back then, Hamptons only got half a show. It only rated half a show. Now you get your own show. So welcome, everybody, with that. Welcome to episode 62. Can't believe we're up to 62, Roberto. Thank you, Roberto, my co-host. Say hello from sunny New York.
Cloudy Manhattan, but it's awesome as always.
Okay, I'm joining you from rainy Paris. I understand Adam Hofer is joining us from always sunny Palm Beach today. Yes?
That's correct. And it is pouring rain, but it was sunny this morning.
Okay. And Justin Agnello, say hi.
Hello, how are you, everybody? I'm out in the Hamptons.
All right, good. So somebody's holding down the fort in the Hamptons. And you've been in the Hamptons exclusively since 2005, am I right?
That's correct. Yeah, no, I originally moved out here the summer of 05, and I've been here ever since.
And Adam, you split your time between New York and the Hamptons. And now maybe Palm Beach?
No, that's incorrect. So I actually do not go into New York. I was born and raised out east. So that is my primary location. And, you know, we're going to start to dabble in Palm Beach, which is sort of like, you know, the natural next step with the Palm Beach Hamptons connection. But most of the time, most of my business, my family, everything is going on in the Hamptons for us. And I've been out there my whole life.
All right. But I said that because I looked at your website and it said 45 listings and a bunch of them were in New York.
So that's because the team that I am on is a New York-based team. So that's really just a product of the way that Element sets us up online. So all of our team listings are meshed onto one page. So that's why you're seeing that.
Well, so that's a perfect segue to the connection between New York City and the Hamptons. The fact that you're on the New York team, you work with New Yorkers, it's critical, the New York connection to your business?
It's 100%. I think, you know, for at the level that, you know, myself and Justin operate, I think it's, you know, makes up a huge portion of our business, that everything really sort of starts in Manhattan. And, you know, we're sort of like the next natural step for any Manhattanite or New Yorker to go to is the Hamptons. But I would say the origin is definitely the city.
And so the natural next segue would be, so after spending 10, 20 years in the Hamptons and understanding the importance of the connection to New York, today you're in Palm Beach. So explain to us the connection between the Hamptons and Palm Beach.
I'll tell you the way that I figured this out is I came down here. I mean, listen, we all know that, especially I know Justin can speak on this too, that most of our clients in the Hamptons are not, you know, buying their primary residence, or they're not, you know, certainly not a lot of first time home buyers, right? Most of our people have 2, 3, 4, maybe even more houses. And, you know, I think one of the reasons that we do so well at Element is, you know, the Element sort of theory is that we set ourselves up in these markets that all sort of feed off of each other. You know, like we opened up an office in Nantucket this summer too, because again, it was seemed like the next natural spot. But last October, I came down to Palm Beach for the first time ever. I used to be, Miami used to be our winter, you know, getaway. And I came down to Palm Beach for an event and I spent a week here. I'd never been here before and I loved it immediately. But, you know, I was eating lunch at one of the local spots and within a half an hour, I'd see 5 or 6 people that I knew from the Hamptons. And after that week, I started coming down about once a month last winter. And, you know, sort of realized with probably something that already everybody knew, but, you know, a lot of our customers are spending the winter down here. And I think even more so post COVID. So that was sort of the catalyst for me to explore coming down here, not only for myself. I mean, listen, my wife had the best winter ever last year because she was able to get away from the cold. So that was very helpful. Kids love it down here too, but for business, it's definitely been a natural and great place to, you know, hang my hat January through March or April, you know, sort of that model of following our customers around, if you will.
So Justin, you said the one thing I got out of Justin before we turned on the cameras and started the show was that you've got a wife and two kids and you're there year round. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, no, I live here year round. They're in school. It's vacation time only when we get to get away. But, you know, like going back to Adam, what he's saying for us, it's, you know, New York City is so close and it's such an important piece of our puzzle. You know, we're in and out of the city a lot and, but no, me, it's all here. I love it here, even in January and February.
Especially in January and February when all the tourists aren't there, right?
You know, honestly, John, it's changed dramatically. I'm telling you, it's like a different scene out here. You know, there's more and more families using the Hamptons as their, you know, almost like their primary. And Manhattan has become a little bit of their secondary. Now that's changing again already. You know, people have to go back to work now. So that's kind of, we've seen that kind of gravitate back towards the original way, but it's a lot busier out here year round. So it's been fun the last 2 years for sure.
That's what we've been seeing is that people didn't necessarily move out east. They just added a house out east and then it became really more of a co-primary residence where they're living in both places. And if go ahead.
With the people being able to work, or let's say they only have to come to the office 4 days out of the, you know, of the five or six that they need to be in office. You know, like by Thursday night, the restaurants here, like even now, like restaurants are packed Thursday night all the way to like usually Monday. You know, Sunday nights are a big scene now because people don't have to go back to the office until probably Tuesday. You know, they only need to be there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, which has been, it's been a game changer for our markets. Like just it's full year. Restaurants are full. Places are full more often, which has been, it's nice.
Retail spaces are staying open where there were seasonal retail spaces are staying open all year long.
They're extending for sure. I don't know how long they'll stay. I think January this year might be a little different. We might see it a little bit more quiet, but that's to be seen yet. But yes, in the last 2 years, it's been extended. You know, the only problem is staffing it and being able to find people to work in some of these places. So that's been a little difficult.
What's it like raising kids there? I mean, there's no more better commitment than raising kids in a community to indicate to people that I'm here and this is a year-round community. So you've got a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old?
I do. And actually, Adam's son and my son both play hockey in Southampton, like in the same league. So there's tons of stuff to do. And the kids are honestly, they're spoiled. They live on the ocean. Like they can go to the beach at any time of day. And it's like the most beautiful beach I've ever seen, you know, and you know, in the United States, I would say it's one of the best beaches. So they're spoiled.
Agreed.
How old are your kids, Adam, again?
One of them just turned 9 and the other one's going to be 12 in December. And I would echo everything that Justin says there. I mean, I say it to my wife all the time. Do these kids really know how good they have it? You know, it's a great place to raise kids. And quite frankly, I think that's one of those things that has, you know, kept our market going, even as things sort of, you know, return to normal, however you want to put it. The Hamptons market is still very strong. And I think a lot of people stayed that we all assumed maybe we're probably going to leave. A lot of them stayed because, especially the ones with kids, because when they went out there at first and stayed for that first year or 18 months, I would think it's probably close to impossible to bring your kids back into the city after getting a taste of that. And even for the parents, You know, it's so easy. I don't know how you do it in there, but it's just, it's easy and it's fun to raise kids out in the Hamptons.
Are there a lot of private school options? Just curious, because I know that everybody talks about the Ross School. That's like the, someone says, you say private school, someone says the Ross School, but I never hear of any others.
There's a few others between Southampton and to East Hampton. I mean, there's Hayground. There's a few other ones that are good schools. I mean, I think Ross gets the most media attention, I call it, but there are options.
Yeah.
When people come out there, are they asking about, aside from, are they asking about the private options? Just curious.
I feel like most of them are aware of the Ross School before they even get there. You know, I don't know. I don't feel like that school question comes up as much still, even though if it is becoming a primary residence, I don't have it a lot.
Yeah.
Our school systems are good. And I think they're a little less, people are a little less apprehensive about throwing them into a public school there than they might be somewhere else.
Sure. Agreed. Now with the influx, were the schools concerned about being overpopulated and was there any sort of issues with that during COVID?
Yeah, there was a few school systems that had to, I don't want to say shut down, but they had to put a cap on to how many people could come. But I mean, there was enough people here and enough staff that they were okay. I mean, most of it, but I mean, like Amagansett, Sag Harbor, East Hampton, those school districts, even Bridgehampton, I mean, some of them doubled and tripled since COVID. So it was definitely a big change, but, you know, it's kind of funny. It's a joke, actually. It's like, you know, 2019 selling real estate and before, I don't think anyone cared about school districts. Very rarely, you know, as a second home in like location, people didn't ask us, oh, how the schools? I mean, that was like way down below, but now it's changed. And like Adam said, it's so many young families have come out here. You know, they think about it. They could have a $3 to $6 million apartment in the city that's, you know, made anywhere from, you know, 1500 square feet to only 25. You know, they could replicate that here and they could get, you know, a 5,000 square foot house on, you know, an acre and a half. And it's just like, it almost like it blows their mind that it's so much space. And when they have kids,
if they can
find it, it's true.
So, I mean, let's talk about your market a little bit. So your market has contracted in the sense that there are fewer contracts signed, but that's primarily because of inventory, right? Inventory is so tight.
Any of the statistics, and hopefully Justin agrees, but in my experience currently, any of the statistics that are being put out there to sort of demonstrate, you know, that the market is whatever, starting to lag or, you know, sales are down, et cetera. The only reason I can see that that's happening is because of a lack of inventory, because I really don't feel that the actual, desire or, you know, or the amount of people that are ready, willing and able to buy, I don't feel like it's changed that much. They've definitely not, you know, something is not necessarily selling in the first weekend, but it's still selling faster than ever before. And I think any you know, lower transactions are definitely, I think, a direct reflection of the inventory.
So what does that mean that's happening to price? Are prices moderate? Are they rising? Are they, since they're, I mean, with such low inventory, we think the prices, if anything, they're definitely stable or going up.
I think you have to take everything into account. I think with everything kind of, the lack of inventory is still there, but, you know, you have to remember, I think like Adam kind of brushed on it, we've hit a peak and you have to, a lot of sellers are still on this mindset that we're kind of on this trajectory where they're putting a bit of extra value to the house, which it has, like Adam said, it has slowed it down a little bit. It's not selling the first week. And buyers are starting to kind of see, you know, they look, our buyers are super smart. So they know value when they see it. I mean, if they go to a house and they see it overpriced by 10, 15%, they're going to see that very quickly. So I think prices are stable. If you price it fair, that house will sell like in a month, like without a doubt. There are so many customers that got pushed out of the market.
I want to zero in on the word stable. When you say prices are stable, you're saying that they're not going to necessarily go up double digits, maybe not even single digits. They're flat and they're not going to go down. Is that the prediction? They're flat?
With certain products, I don't think new construction is going to be flat. I think new construction is the only market that's going to probably continue to grow a little bit, just with construction costs, you know, buying land, the value they had to pay to purchase. But I think the bulk of the market, I think it hasn't plateaued, but it's definitely not increasing as fast as it was.
You guys know, so Manhattan, during COVID, we got walloped, right? And we saw a tremendous decline on average, probably 8 to 10% overall, like market wide. In the luxury sector, there were certain things that went down 20-25% and things like that. During that time period, you guys really thrived and prices really, really went up. We are probably back generally around 2019 levels. We came down, we came up, we actually popped a little bit, and now we're just softening a bit. But we're still around 2019 levels, pre-COVID. Where are you guys now, generally, compared to where it was in 2019? Like, do you have any sort of metric on you're 8% higher, you're 20% higher? I know everything's very segmented, but generally.
I think as far as pricing goes, and it is much more difficult to sort of put a number on it out by us, but I think if a good product like new construction or, you know, a charming older home that has had a great renovation or great location, like things like that, prime stuff, those are still selling quickly and at, you know, higher than they ever would have before. And I think the marginal stuff, maybe things that need work, or, you know, maybe it's in a, you know, B-minus location or something like that. I think those are adjusting to somewhere between 2021 and 2019 pricing,
right? Let me ask you, so like a really solid house, in Southampton somewhere that was $3 million in 2019. Today, that same buyer who was looking at that, they were indecisive then, and they're now looking at that house again today for whatever reason, that house is like what, $4 million more?
I think that's right. Yeah, I think I don't think we're at 2019. You have to remember, going into the fourth quarter of 2019, our inventory was through the roof. It was still a ton of products. I mean, we went into the first quarter, February, the world was coming to an end. And then boom, like you said, everyone left Manhattan. Our inventory got like demolished within like a year and a half. So that was such a rapid just change. It was crazy. So I don't think we're back to 2019 yet. I would say we're still more on like 2020 and 21, the early stages of those of that time frame.
Let me ask you about taxes, especially because one of us is in Palm Beach right now, and I'm in Connecticut. At the $2 million mark, my understanding is if you came out to Greenwich or New Canaan or Darien or Westport, you're going to pay for a $2 million house, you're going to be looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of $25,000 in taxes. I know that my sister is looking in Palm Beach right now in Florida, you're going to pay 2% of the purchase price. So that $2 million house, you're going to pay $40,000 a year in taxes. And everybody in Palm Beach says there's not enough schools in Florida. They don't have enough infrastructure to support all the people who want to live there year round. When I think of the Hamptons, I think of another place with too little infrastructure, charging perhaps too little in taxes to support a bunch of year round people coming out. Can both of you respond to that? I mean, are the taxes still cheap? And is that the reason why you don't have any schools?
The taxes are a huge, something that I think most people don't even realize until they start doing their research, what an amazing benefit. The taxes are just so low, comparatively speaking, to even anywhere else on Long Island, I don't But I don't see them. I don't think we fall short though either. I mean, all the services seem to be there. Like the schools are great, and the you know, the public utilities, whatever, the roads. I mean, everything is there. So they seem to be collecting just enough to, you know, keep everything running.
Well, it's funny, and we have to remember too, like, you know, on a $2 million house, you're paying probably between what, 77,000 and nine, let's say, somewhere in there a year. And, but you know, the Hamptons has a lot of other taxes that we hit you with that are kind of a surprise, like the Peconic Land Trust. I mean, that's a 2% of the purchase price. I mean, there's, so, and you know, the town is funny. They'll move money around certain ways. So it's, they have plenty in my opinion, like Adam said, like, everything's good. Everything's up and running. The schools are good, and our school buses don't break down too often, so we're okay.
But it's always nice when someone asks you what the taxes are, and you tell them, and their first assumption is that you're giving them a monthly figure when actually it's for the year.
Right.
So can we talk about the townships, like, you know, East Hampton versus Southampton versus Sag Harbor, whatever? Are there different? Like, are some of the governing bodies a little bit more efficient than others? Are there ones that, for example, they're like, well, you'll never get anything done in Sag Harbor because, you know, you never get your plans approved, et cetera, because they're just the worst and they're totally disorganized. You got to, you know, if you want to build, you should probably look in East Hampton. I mean, are there any sort of general thoughts on that in the ether among you guys as brokers or in the community?
It's a very incriminating question.
Generally, look, are there differences?
There's really not. I think they're all just very they're very sensitive. Both these markets are very, like, all of them, Southampton, Sag Harbor. I mean, there's smaller hamlets within those places that have sometimes their own rules, their own laws. Like, you know, Sagaponic Village is very, you know, they're very strict. Regarding size of home that you can build on certain properties, where you can build, our whole community south to Montauk is, you know, we have to be very conscious of our water. Like, you know, it's something that they have taken very seriously, and that we have to make sure, you know, they have to apply all these rules to everybody. So they have rules that, you know, we have to understand are here to protect the future. And I think that's super important, and they're very strict on it. But I mean, Adam knows, you know, East or South or Sag, I mean, they're all, you know, come to the table with exactly what you want done, and that's going to help you. Like, work with the right people, right attorneys, right builders. That's going to be what's important.
What does that mean, water? Are you short drinking water, or is it just for the lawns that it's sensitive?
No. So we're, you know, we rely on, like, the water. We drink it. There's wells. There's, you know, we don't have sewers. You know, we're all on septic. So all that goes into all of our oceans, our bays, our, you know, freshwater ponds or inlets. So that's what they protect.
I like the one word that Justin used that was very, that was perfect, was sensitive, right? And so it's, you know, this is why it's also important to, not that this is like a plug, but, you know, work with a realtor that actually has lived there for a while and knows what they're doing, because you can't, you know, some people just roll in and, you know, you look at a piece of property and you're like, all right, well, I'll just come in here and we'll clear all this out and, you know, put a big extension over here. Doesn't work that way, right? There's a lot of different nuances. There's historic buildings and things like that. And each township is equally, can be equally as difficult or equally as easy, because Justin's 100% right. Like, if you want to go and make an improvement to a property or build a new house or change the landscaping, for the most part, you're going to get done what you want to get done within reason, but it's all about the approach too. You know, you can't just like barge into town hall and, you know, start making demands. You're going to do everything the right way. It's still a small community. It's still a small town. Most of the people that have been working at town hall are generational, you know, don't always love to see new people coming in. So you have to approach it the right way. But there's a lot of little nuances, and that's what we're here for, is to sort of like educate people. But I think ultimately, you know, you can accomplish what you want to accomplish.
Talking about that, like construction, is buying land an impossibility, or do you have to buy something that you're going to tear down if you want to build? And then the next incarnation of that is there were tremendous delays. Well, we have Scott Hobbs actually on the call. There were tremendous delays. And then, you know, I talked to a contractor who I know out there very well. And he was just like, you know, for a lot of my colleagues, they don't have workers who show up. There's no work. People won't work. Has that changed? Has that cleared up a little bit? Maybe Scott can talk about that for a bit. Scott, you're on mute. He wants to hear you guys.
It's definitely going to clear up a little bit. I mean, most of the builders and most of the bigger ones that have worked out here, you know, look, land is a very hot commodity. There's not a lot of it, as well, just like the housing market. But I've spoken to a lot of builders and things are definitely easing up. You know, it doesn't take 8 months to get windows anymore. It takes 4, but you know, like most of these contractors now they've had the land, so they've already pre-ordered. They kind of streamline it very well, at least most of them. The only thing that's still really hard to get, I heard, is dishwashers and stuff like that, refrigerators, Wolf stove. But I think, you know, I think construction, you know, what used to take 12 months is now taking probably 14 to 16 months to do. But I haven't really heard much of the labor shortage. You know, most of the contractors I have or work with, you know, they can get a job done, you know, with the right amount of people.
Scott, can you get work done?
I guess it all depends on the specific parts. I mean, the most of the builders on the custom end, at least, and I'm sure also on the speculative end, have figured out the new timelines. So depending upon the type windows, some are more readily available. Others are much longer out there. Just, you know, the timelines, instead of ordering them 4 months in advance, now you order them 7 months in advance. People are always in short supply in the Hamptons, but that's where you develop your relationships and make sure that you can actually get the guys there when you need to. There is always a systemic crush in the Hamptons that, you know, I'm making up this number, but 70 to 80% of the construction projects have to finish, you know, before 4th of July. Most of them actually have to finish before Memorial Day. And so during that time frame, you know, getting the landscapers, getting the painters, getting the countertop guys, getting those final finish guys is always a challenge. But that's just the nature of working in the Hamptons. So everyone's used to that. And that's where you try to find different labor sources and get them in.
Is getting work done in the Hamptons harder than Connecticut?
It's different. It's different. I mean, there's a whole ecosystem there. And I mean, all the guys that we use are all local. All of our employees there are local, and it's very important to be local. If you come into Hamptons and you don't understand the Hamptons, you have a long learning process to get involved there. You know, the permitting processes in general, it's kind of like in Connecticut or Westchester. Some places are easier than others. None are easy. And if you're trying to do what's as of right, it's not too bad. But if you want to ask for some favors and do something different, that's very, very difficult. And you have a long approval process.
Which township is more difficult?
Local. How the heck do you get local labor in the Hamptons? I can't afford the Hamptons. How do you get ditch diggers and carpenters in the Hamptons?
Local is a relative term. There's a lot of community. And I mean, and the reason this stuff, you know, people complain about a quote like Greenwich premium or a Hamptons premium, and that is that the guys are driving an hour and a half or 2 hours. Yeah, I mean, it's tough during the summer in particular. It's very hard.
And then if you want the local, you have to pay that same price a little bit more. So there's a lot of different angles you can take.
Scott, how does that work for those guys? So there's a lot of guys when I'm out there, and these guys come from Mid-Island at the beginning of the day, getting into the Hamptons. I mean, it is bumper to bumper, solid hour plus to get anywhere in town. And then at the end of the day, if you, you know, if you're working your way back west just to do, you know, you're coming from one township to another, you have to time it because there's so many people. So these employees, they're obviously not getting paid for that travel, right?
Ultimately, people get paid for their time. And so, you know, if a guy lives in Riverhead and he can work in Riverhead and get $20 an hour, or he can go to the Hamptons, but it takes him 3 hours round trip each day to get there, he needs to make $30 an hour. So, I mean, it, you know, people work out those equations. In some cases, it's like, okay, he might get $20 an hour, but he will get paid for his travel time. You know, like if we have projects in like Montauk, yeah, you got to pay a premium to guys for Montauk because it's an extra, you know, during the summer, you know, it can be an hour, hour and a half extra by the time you hit even East Hampton. So
each way.
Pardon?
Each way.
I mean, it can be bad. And so, but you know, systems have a way of working themselves out. And if it was very bad conditions, the premium's not much. But when things are good, you have to pay guys fairly for what they're trying to do.
Justin, Adam, do you have regular houses for the people that Scott Hobbs employs? I have a perception that I can't afford the Hamptons. Is that a misperception? Can you find me something in one of the less chic towns for $100 million?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's product out there that you can find, you know, in the neighborhoods under $1 million. That's going to be, you know, not scary. You're not walking into something that's going to be a disaster.
Under $1 million.
Sure.
Okay. They're few and far between, but they're out there.
There was an article that just came out about something. And there was a woman commenting on East Hampton, and she was saying, you know, the median price is above $1 million, and it'll probably never go below that again, ever again.
Well, I mean, she might be right to a point, but I don't know.
Go ahead.
You know, I just think, like, you know, a lot of people bought under that under million property. Like you said, John, there's a lot of local people that are buying. A lot of the towns are really into, like, trying to get affordable housing. They're building one new one in East Hampton. They built one in Amagansett recently. I forget in Southampton if they had a new one, but Southampton has a few of them. So they're trying to make that affordability better, but you know, there's like, you know, like in Southampton, North Sea and Noyak, you know, smaller lots, you know, littler homes, East Hampton Springs, you can find something that's a little out of town. Again, smaller lots, but affordable. You can find those under $1 million homes for people. You know, I just did my team who kind of works on the lower side of things. You know, they just put like three things under $1 million in contracts. You know, so it's out there, you know,
and where were those?
Two of them were in Springs, and one of them was in Noyak, which is a hamlet of Sag Harbor.
Do you guys have much of an off-market product where people privately I want to sell this, but I do not want it advertised. I do not want it out there, and it's all word of mouth. And you all, for the most part, the brokerage community, at least the, you know, the people who are doing the majority of the business, know one another. And like here, there's quite a bit of that.
I think the term off market has been grossly misused over the last couple of years. And you know, it's good sort of a marketing tool, if you will, and it made a lot of brokers feel like heroes to say that they had something off market that essentially wasn't. But I mean, there's some of that. I have one now, but it's a true off market. It's exactly what you just said. Like the people, they're the original owners of the house, and they're very emotional about it. And they don't want to, you know, they don't want to see their house on Zillow. They don't want their neighbors to ask them about it. I mean, they want to sell it, but they're just like, we need to try and get this done without putting it, you know, public. And that's the only, you know, so I'm doing it the old fashioned way, you know, just sort of like calling and, you know, shooting these vague emails around. But I think, I don't know, I'd be interested to hear Justin's opinion about it, but I think, you know, is there a huge off-market presence, like a true one? You know, I don't know. I don't think it's huge, but it's
I think it's like, it's very spotty. I think the higher end you go, I think the more you see it, you know, like, I feel like, you know, but you just get so many different types of clientele. Like Adam said, like, you know, you get people here that buy the trophy property and they don't really care. It's nothing like super emotional to them. But then you get the people that have been here for like generations, and like, you know, it's very hard for them to let go of their houses. They're the ones that are more inclined to be like, listen, you know, let's do this the proper way. Whereas sometimes the trophy people are just like, yeah, bring me a number. You know, if you bring it the right number, I'll sell it. So you get a lot of it. I think, like, again, some of the big stuff like on the ocean and stuff like that have always flirted with like letting it out there that, hey, we might be interested in selling for the right price. And you hear it a little bit, but most of the work is done, you know, the normal way.
Yeah. And I feel like on the, like the ones you just spoke about, like, oh yeah, so-and-so would sell, you know, it's available off market for X amount of dollars. And then you hear that number and you think to yourself, well, of course they would sell it for that because it's insane, you know?
Yeah.
You guys have some great big listings. And I'm wondering, how do you find your clients? It occurs to me that your clients aren't watching TikTok and Instagram to pick their realtor. It occurs to me that you began the show talking about the importance of relationship with New York community. And I assume that's to find your buyers of Hamptons, and that you live in the town, and that the way you find your listing clients is that you are involved in the local community. So can you speak to how you prospect and where you find your clients? Because a lot of us have never seen listings as the size and the complexity that you're representing out there in the Hamptons, you know, $8 million, $9 million, $20 million properties. And I'm thinking the kind of people who list and buy $20 million properties, $10 million properties, don't find you in the phone book. They probably don't just pick a listing agent out of the internet site. So talk about relationship selling for a minute.
Oh, for me, you know, like, it's one reason why I love Douglas Elliman as much as I do. I've been with this company the whole 18 years, and it's because I work with so many agents in Manhattan who I have good relationships with, who, you know, like you said, like, that's where it starts, right? Very rarely do you get someone who's like, oh, I'm moving from, like, everyone says, where's the European buyer, right? All the high-end sellers out here are like, oh yeah, you know, where are the Germans and the Asians and the everyone else? And you're like, well, look, they never come to the Hamptons first. Like, they don't even know where we exist very much. It's like they go to Manhattan first. So for me, it's important to have those relationships with those brokers in the city to understand that, like, we run a very strict organization out here. Our, like, for my team, like, we've established ourselves for so long. It's important for them so that when they hand that client to you, they know they're going to be comfortable. But otherwise, you know, for prospecting, you know, you do this so long, you stay involved. You referrals are so important here when you're building your brand and your business, and you have to really lean on that. For me, you know, that's been something very important that, you know, you do a good job for your clients, they're going to tell your friends. And they could be anything too, like, not just a sale of a home. It could be a great rental that you put them in, and, you know, thank God everything went, you know, well, nothing broke, nothing, no mishaps. That momentum will really help propel your business. So make sure. You know, I always say to my team and the younger people on my team, they'll be like, listen, make sure you do every job super important, because it's going to reflect on your business and your referrals.
Yeah, I would echo everything Justin said. I mean, especially, you know, our company has such a phenomenal setup that I definitely, you know, sometimes I'm working harder to build relationships with other brokers than than going out to try and find buyers or sellers, you know, because most likely, I mean, you're in, this is not, this is a secondary or third or fourth home. So you're not the first round, right? So you want to go to the first round who's already has a long-term established relationship with that person and make sure that when their client in the city says, hey, we're thinking about getting a place in the Hamptons, right? That's the first person they're going to defer to. And we want that person to say, great, I have a guy out there that I know and trust, talk to him. Like, so, you know, we spend a lot of time cultivating those relationships. You know, we both do the same thing, still a lot of print advertising, right? You don't necessarily expect someone to open up the magazine and say, this guy Justin's a good looking guy. I think I'm going to call him to list my house. But when someone says, hey, you should use Justin or Adam, they're going to, oh yeah, I've seen that guy in the magazine. You know, he's got a top rated team or whatever. Then that's how those phone calls start coming in. But, you know, the rest of it, that's why it's, I don't know what Justin's experience is with this, but, you know, if you get a new person on the team, you're trying to mentor a new broker and, you know, of course, day one, they want a listing or they want a nice, you know, ready buyer. And if it doesn't happen by the second week they have their license, they're pulling their hair out, getting frustrated. How do you get them? It's, you know, this is a long, long game, right? You know, I just got a listing, you know, a month or so ago from somebody that I thought about it. I've been working on the guy for 4 years, right? And not even talking about listing the house, but just sort of building that relationship. So when the time came, I was like his first phone call, right? And just to like touch on the social media thing, because most people know I'm a huge social media guy. I don't think anybody's going to jump on my social and say, I'm going to call this guy up and buy a house from him. But, you know, we use that. It's just constant marketing, right? Because I think that played into the scenario I just talked about. Like that person is watching me. They want to see who I am as a person. And they want to see what kind of business I'm doing. And they can find all that on social media. And then, you know, maybe it's next week or maybe next year or 2 years from now, when they're ready, hopefully they'll reach out to me because they like what they see. But, you know, all this stuff takes time. I think every day we have to be doing stuff, assuming that at some point someone's going to be ready. And, you know, if they've been watching me for the last year, wherever, they like what they see and they're going to call me. Or if one of their friends refers us, they'll already know who we are and they'll feel comfortable, you know, going on that recommendation.
And that, and that's as much media. That's as much secrets as we're going to get.
Adam, your social media is very good. It's very
Thanks,
warm.
Buddy.
Shows your family, the whole thing. And I know you, but I feel like I know you better than I do. And that's there's a familiarity there, which is great.
And that's the goal. I mean, that, you know, social media for starters is free, right? Doesn't cost a thing to do that, but it's an amazing way to, like I always say,
nothing's
like,
free. Nothing is free.
I guess I have. Yeah. Anyway,
maybe you're a natural
or whatever I'm putting on there is costing me a lot of money. So I guess it's not free, but, you know, I lost my train of thought. I always say it's like a good way to, you know, you're basically taking somebody out to lunch without taking them out to lunch, right? So you're getting to know somebody at a comfortable pace, you know, which people also appreciate, right? Because nobody really wants the hard sell. They want to take the time to figure out if that's, you know, who you're going to work with.
I love that. Taking someone out to lunch without taking them out to lunch. That's what you equate social media with, where they get to know you over a longer period of time.
Right. Yeah.
I love it. I mean,
before social media, how else would you get to know somebody, right? And now it's like, I could do that to 10,000 different people every day, you know, and they can decide, because this is a people business and it's all about relationships. So they can decide. I'm giving them every opportunity to decide whether or not they want to work with me, you know.
And you get up there frequently in an unscripted, natural way. That's the secret. You just get up there and talk and let them get to know you.
Yeah, it's got to be natural. Yeah, because the ones that are, you know, you can always tell when somebody has it, you know, someone else doing it for them. Or the accounts that only post like, you know, sold and closed. I mean, they're not, they're not that exciting, right?
I'm in the middle.
But you've also been doing it a lot longer than I have. So you got the upper hand there for sure.
But Justin, we heard two things from Adam. We heard print, and I would like to hear your reaction to print, because I think print is more important in a community like the Hamptons than it is maybe for Roberto in New York.
Well, John, I didn't want to give you all my secrets. That's the thing. But
yeah, no,
you're absolutely right. To be honest with you, like, you have to think about our seller. Like, honestly, our average age for our seller is, I don't know, probably 65, you know, maybe somewhere in there, maybe higher. So you can't forget, like, my whole design is local papers still to this day. You know, a huge part of my budget goes to those avenues, because I know, just because being in the community and knowing these people, they still pick up the East Hampton Star and read it. Like, that's just part of their game. Or they pick up the Southampton Press. So without a doubt, I spend thousands and thousands of dollars with my big face there with all my properties, because I know, you know, that's where they're going. And the phone picks up and they do call us for that. So they do like that.
But you know, example, like there's Manhattan Magazine, there's all these magazines that in New York, no one touches. The yep. moment you go to sit, you go out there, you're in Citarella, you're on your way to the beach, you grab that Hamptons magazine, you grab everything you can, and just to go out there and just read it, and you literally flip through every single page, and then you'll toss it. But you go through it. These magazines here do not get touched.
Right. Scott Hobbs, you have a print strategy. Do you have a print in the Hamptons and in Connecticut? And do they do, and are they equal, or is it more important in some communities than others?
Really, our print strategy is geared around marketing networking events. And so we have a much more robust one inside of Connecticut, which allows us to go to marketing events with architects and other leaders. In the Hamptons, we really don't need to, and we don't have that same connection. So our manager in the Hamptons decided not really to do any print. I mean, we'll still every once in a while do an ad with one of our Hamptons cottages and gardens or some of the other items, but we do not do much total, and we do very little in the Hamptons, which as a contractor, I don't think that's as surprising. Realtors obviously have a whole different model and need to fight differently.
Yeah, we do a lot of printing, and look, I would say it's 60% for us and 40% for the client, really. I mean, it's more about making sure, it's almost like Adam's version of social media. Like, you put out that content so much, people see it, they remember you. It's the same thing with the print. You gotta try to balance it. But I'll be honest with you, I feel as time goes by that more of that digital space is definitely becoming the place to really push to brand, to really market. You know, I think it's only going to get better.
Let's talk about opening up a new market, Adam, like Palm Beach, for example. Do you think that print is as important in the Palm Beach market? It's not a market where you can rest on a 20-year history. You obviously want to make a big splash, you know, in a short amount of time, a couple of years. What's the best way to do that? Again, social media?
Like Justin said, we can't give away too many secrets. So, I mean, I think, again, this is like, would be advice that you would give to a new agent. Like, everything takes time, consistency, and balance, right? So we're going to find a good balance between digital and print, and we're going to, you know, be consistent with it. And, you know, someone who's just getting into it, like, they put an ad in whatever, they don't get results from the first ad. They say, oh, this is what a waste of money, right? Like, you can't think that you're going to get any results from, maybe you will, maybe you're lucky, but that's not what you're looking for. Like, putting the ad consistently in the East Hampton Press, like Justin said, for example, what that does is when he introduces himself to someone, you know, at a hockey game, kids hockey game, whatever, says his name, most likely that person is in their head is going to say, you know, to themselves, how do I know this guy? Like, they know him and they didn't even realize it because they've seen the ad so many times. So, you know, jumping into this market, again, going to do it the same way that I did it at home, right? Except, you know, I'm going to reach out to brokers here, but also lean on New York, because all these people that are in here at Palm Beach right now are either from New York or the Hamptons. And basically what we're doing is letting them know that the same guy that's helped you elsewhere can now help you here in some sort of capacity, right? So that's like the message. I wouldn't be coming here and presenting myself the same way I would in the Hamptons, right? The Hamptons is home. I am there year round. If I'm here, it's only for a few days at a time. But it's just trying to like tap in and continue to be sort of this advisor, if you will, to the same person, but in multiple markets. And, you know, the announcement or, you know, the promotion is going to come social media, local print. They have a similar version of Hamptons Magazine that everybody picks up, you know, so, and then, you know, it's going to take time. It's probably not a whole lot is going to, you know, again, maybe it will, but probably a whole lot won't happen this season because we're, you know, planting the seed. But by next year, if we're consistent with it, you know, there's an opportunity to really make things happen.
How would you characterize or distinguish, or what has surprised you about the Palm Beach market as a differentiation from the market you're working in, considering it's still the same, it's the same demographic? What's different?
Well, here, I mean, listen, the Hamptons is small. In some regards, it's, you know, there's small towns there, you know, there's a heavy, you know, it's just as big of a local population as there is second homeowners. You know, if you're a local, you know, a lot of people and everybody knows everything about everybody. But if you thought the Hamptons was small, this is really small. So this is a very, the island, Palm Beach Island specifically is, you know, is a very small community, a lot of people that have been here for a very long time. They're very traditional. So it, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, just like anything else, you have to have sort of a delicate entry. You know, I don't want to do, and no offense, Roberto, but I don't want to do what a lot of city brokers tried to do in the beginning of COVID, whereas they, you know, just storm into the neighborhood and try to set up shop right away. Like you have to, you know, you gotta be careful down here. And again, that's not what I'm trying to do. It's a more delicate approach, but you know, the island is small, and it's a very interesting market right now. I mean, there's a dozen listings. I don't even know if there's that many.
So how can you compete? How can you make money when you're the new guy on the street, softly coming down the street? But that's tough.
Yeah, it will be. It will be. Again, it a lot of, you know, sort of the plan on being down here is really to spend, you know, to sort of, what's the right word for it? Sort of not babysit, but, you know, be with my customer, really probably spend more time finding customers and clients down here to do business with up there than doing actual business here. You know what I mean?
Understood.
But like, you know, we talked about land in the Hamptons before and the median price not going back down. It's, you know, we live there. I mean, we basically are on an island too, right? It's not going to get any bigger, and it's the same here. And, you know, there are the next ring, if you will, of underdeveloped areas or sort of, you know, B locations that never had a lot of focus on it. And as people get placed out of the island itself, there's a lot of opportunities in West Palm, you know, so maybe that's where we kind of focus, but.
We got a few minutes left. I want to look forward. I want some predictions. I heard in the last thing you said, and I want to hear from Justin as well. You said median price is not going to go down. And I have heard this from the Palm Beach agents. I've heard this from the Vero Beach. I said, you know, isn't Florida just one hurricane away from a price correction? And they say, no, no way. When I talk to the folks in Nantucket, and I say, are we, you know, if we hit a recession, are you recession proof? Oh yeah, we are recession proof. You two sound about as bullish. What's it gonna take for East Hampton to feel the pain. What do you predict for East Hampton over the next 10 years? And I would like to point out, it's really hard to get there, and you guys are fighting about your airport. So let me just point out that getting there is not getting easier.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't stop people from coming. They know how wonderful it is once they get there. And it's why, you know, here's a good point real quick that I like, people are always like, oh, I want to be in Southampton because it's 20 minutes closer to Manhattan or 40. And then I say to them, okay, fine. That's great. Let's look in Southampton. But where are you going when you get here? Because when you get here, if you're constantly going to Montauk or Amagansett or East, then that's not the call. But look, I think what it's going to take, you know, our market's going to see a correction. But if you, John, if you look at our 10-year charts, they do nothing but flat and up, like year over year over year. So like I said, I think prices are going to cool. I don't see a dramatic change, maybe a 10 to 15%. But with the new construction that's going to pump out in March, like there's so much new construction hitting in March that are going to be beautiful. They've spent all the money on the product. They can't lower their prices. They can't duplicate what they're building. And the constant battle with the Hamptons is that everyone here has deep pockets. So the sellers don't budge and the buyers don't budge because they don't have to buy here most of the time. So it's just a waiting game. And then all of a sudden it turns and we go back to normal.
What is the new product? That, I mean, that's an indication of where the market is going. What does new product mean out there in the Hamptons?
Well, like, it's like this. It's like, so like south of the highway, right? It might've been 650-ish a square foot in 2019, right? Now it's 850, you know, a square foot, you know, so that's what I mean by like, that's the new product. That's the new like set, like that price has been set. And so many of these builders were rushing to get things done. They bought the land, let's call it 2019. And now, you know, with all the setbacks they've had, you're going to see some good products slowly hit the market, I think, in the next, you know, next 6 months for sure.
Enough to make a difference? Enough to move the bar on the inventory numbers?
Yeah, I think you're going to see some good inventory come. Like, I definitely forecast, like, buyers are getting excited. Like I told you guys, so many buyers got pushed out of the market and they're begging for good product to hit. And I think they're going to go for it.
What's being built? $2 million homes, $5 million homes, $10 million homes.
It's probably as like maybe you get to 2.5 as new construction, but it's like Adam always says, B locations. So I would say like mostly your 4 million and up new construction.
And just going back to the original question, I mean, you have to look at these places. Nantucket is extremely hard to get to. And, you know, the pricing there continues to go up. I would love nothing more than to have a house there. It's, you know, it's one of the most amazing places in the world. And it's an island, right? It can't get any bigger. In fact, it's going to get even harder and harder to build there. So it's just going to keep going up. It's the same thing by us. You know, you asked the question about land before, you know, getting to the point where any raw land has been going to be bought by the town and you will have to tear something down. So, and again, it's the same thing here in Palm Beach, the island, you can't make the island any bigger. They're about to change a lot of the building laws and things like that. So it's going to be hard to build bigger houses here. All that stuff is going to keep, you know, keep the values where they're at and potentially, you know, push them higher slowly.
Gosh. Well, you can get to us by boat, car, or plane. So there's different options that you
can and get train. On.
And train, yeah, and train.
I mean, if you think about it, I mean, the Hamptons can be a miserable drive, but it's 3 hours. I mean, you can spend that much time getting to LaGuardia or Kennedy. I mean, right. It's alone, nevertheless, when you actually get into the airport. So,
and you know, to be honest with you, it's not always the Hamptons where you hit the traffic. Getting out of the city, you know, you're fighting there sometimes too.
That's the worst part. I agree. Guys, amazing. Thank you so
much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was fun.
Great stuff.
Learned a lot. So I really appreciate it.
And, do I get a prediction on the airport?
I think it's going to be up and running.
It'll never close.
Yeah, I think there are going to be less commercial helicopters, but I think it's going to be up and running.
Yeah, it's all about the helicopters.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, guys. This was a great show.
Guys, thank you.
We're going to post it on YouTube, and you guys are going to be social media darlings. Adam already is, and Justin, you know, this show is going to be transformative. I feel it.
All right. Thank you.
John, enjoy.
Great job. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. Bye.